Hello and welcome to Freshies. My name is Phil and this is the podcast for the game development community in the Northern Territory of Australia. Freshies is named after the freshwater crocodiles that roam our waterways. Much like them, we're a little smaller than more well-known contemporaries, but still capable of surprising folks with games that take a bite and don't let go. Please join us as we follow three game development studios creating three very different games throughout 2025, plus interviews with folks across the industry in the top end. This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Larrakia people. My guest this episode is Jericho Diputado, a solo developer working under the name of Zap Games. Jericho has been in the NT for 12 years, and during that time has become an incredibly consistent and enthusiastic participant in the game jams that are run out of the NT Game Designers Group. He is prolific in genres as well as entries. He's made action platformers, driving sims, beekeeping simulators, reaction clickers, puzzle games, and more. So his portfolio on Itch is looking extremely sweet. But today, rather than Game Jam Games, we are going to be talking about the project that will keep him going in 2025, his main project that is going to be going throughout the whole of this year. And it's the one that we're going to be checking in quarterly throughout 2025. So join us as we talk through Jericho's game. Okay, so let's get started. So, the guest here today is Jericho. He works under the name of Zap Games, double A double P, by the way. So, Z double A double P, if you want to look it up on itch.io. You've heard my intro of you, Jericho. Is there anything more you want to add? Is there anything like what you've, I don't know, how do you see yourself in the NT game designers community?
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty much sums up my what I've been doing for the last like 2.5 years now. Just been like participating in game jams, just doing a lot of like game development learning the past few years. But now that I've kind of like have a bit of like grasp of things, I wanted to like create a more longer project, like at least more than 1 month now. And yeah, so for this project that I'm doing this year is gonna be my biggest at the moment, at least.
Yeah, because I guess having done so many game jams, I mentioned in the intro, like you are prolific and you are reliable. whenever we're making up like the numbers of like, oh, how many people do we think we're actually going to get doing this game jam, it's like we can always count on Jericho because he's always made games in these things. So how's it been, I guess, to get underway, like how's it been changing your mindset from, you know, game jam games, which, you know, as you say, you work on for maybe, you know, 2 weeks to a month, changing that mindset from a game jam game to a more long-term game. Has there been any change that you've had to make in how you approach it?
Definitely. It's going to be like more in the structuring, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like for a game jam game, you're basically just going in, just doing everything as you go. Mm-hmm. And you don't really have to like structure things too much. You just like if it works, then it's good. I mean, it's a good like mantra to just ship it. Exactly. It's that's still a good mantra even if you're making a longer game, because especially if you don't have much resources. But you definitely have to plan a little bit more, structure a little bit more, organize a bit more, and that's kind of been what I've been doing for the past few weeks, actually, just preparing for this project. And yeah, there's just definitely a lot more planning, a lot more like, you know, going on the board or like, you know, virtual boards now. And yeah, no, it's certainly different, and I don't really know what to expect yet, because, and I haven't really made a longer game, but so far it's going all right.
Yeah, that's good. What kind of, I guess, for people that are looking to make use of these kind of tools, like the project management tools and all that kind of stuff, like what's your weapon of choice with regards to like the planning?
Yeah, so it's actually been like I usually start off with OneNote. Mm-hmm. Like it's Microsoft OneNote, and I also use Notion for to-do list task management. But yep. I actually been playing around with Obsidian at the moment. It's kind of like a OneNote alternative, but you can also do like you can also put Kanban boards into it, like one in Notion. So it's kind of like an OneNote and Notion combined together. So I actually kind of like it a lot compared to what I was using before.
Yeah, I've heard of it. It seemed from what I can understand, it seemed a little bit more complicated to set up, but then once you kind of got into it, it was better.
It's actually quite I think it's quite similar to what's that that code, Visual Code, yeah.
Oh, okay, sure. Oh,
no, is it Visual Code? Yeah. So it has like it's closed source, but it has a lot of community plugins, and that's what makes it like really, really good. You can like really extend it. The vanilla version is already good. It has like this kind of visualization of like you can like connect your documents, your notes together, mm-hmm. and you make your own wiki.
Oh,
but
cool.
But you can also visualize it with this node kind of like node system, like with like a tree with links. But then the community plugins, you can add like you know, a Kanban board. You can add like I think there's like, you know, in like a Miro node, kind of like a mind map.
Yeah.
Plugin as well. So that's really cool. So like I was like, I've been playing around it for the last few weeks, and I think I'm moving to it, and it's also free. So it's like,
yeah, that's very compelling. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's and I'm kind of like, you know, kind of wanted to get away a little bit from Microsoft software.
Oh yeah. Understandable.
Different,
yeah.
Different things for now. Someday I'm gonna be switching to Linux, I swear.
Oh yeah. I'm pretty close to that. If that's for my
OS.
Yeah. If they force me to go to Windows 11, then I think I'm just gonna have to move to like Linux Mint or something like that. I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm like thinking as well. So I'm gonna probably trial run that with some of my older computers and see how it feels. But from what I've seen, it looks really nice, and I think it's very it's been a lot of work has been done onto it, so it's much more easier to transition than before.
Yeah. Back when I was in uni, which is a long time ago now, but I was using Ubuntu Linux, which is still a pretty good choice, I think. But yeah. I think Mint is really taken over in terms of like an easy one, especially for gamers and game developers. I think it's got a lot of the stuff that we need to use. But enough of planning. I haven't actually asked you. So the project that you are going to do in 2025. So we actually spoke before we started the interview, and I thought you were doing one thing, but you've zigged and you've zagged, and now you've started. you're going to be starting something that I don't know about. So I'm as interested in hearing about this as our listeners, I'm sure, will be. So I know it's very early, and I know you may not have like an actual elevator pitch for the game, but could you just talk us through what kind of genre you're looking at? What kind of what is the game that you're going to be trying to get some progress on in 2025?
Yeah, I actually do have like a draft elevator pitch, so
yeah, well,
I'm
shoot.
Probably just gonna
go ahead
start with that. Yeah, so basically, it's the name of the game is at least the current name is it's called Mandrake Merchant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a management game. It's a management and farming simulator where you grow and sell elemental mandrake plants on your own shop. So this game was actually the entry that I put in for the last game jam last December.
Yes, I remember it. I did play it.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Thank you. But yeah, it's I really like the kind of like the concept of it, and I kind of like using like some kind of unique creature like a mandrake. So magical weird thing, I suppose.
Magical weird screaming screaming plants. Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. But I'm planning to like change it like a little bit, kind of add some elements onto them, and at least at the moment that's the plan. And it's kind of funny because the inspiration of the game actually came from a different game, a completely different game.
Right.
So I don't know if you know the the Yakuza series?
Yes, yeah, I'm very familiar with the Yakuza series. Well, Like a Dragon nice. Now, they've renamed it, I guess. So.
That's exactly where it came from, basically. I've played that like a few months ago and before the game jam started. And one of the it's basically a game with a lot of mini games on it.
Yeah.
And one of the mini games in there is like, I really enjoyed. It's the business simulator mini game.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I spent so long in that thing.
Me too, man.
It's so good.
It's so great. I was so inspired. And so I was like, oh, we need to make a mini game for this game jam. So I thought maybe I should like recreate that in like a smaller scale. So I kind of thought of something simple. I don't know how I end up with Mandrakes, honestly, but I went with that and I kind of like added like, you know, those projections, like, you know, expected profit and stuff like that.
Yes.
And yeah. Ended up with that game jam. But now when I was like planning or brainstorming for ideas to expand it, it's becoming more of like a first person kind of like a dungeon crawler control scheme, you know, when you like you move by in a grid.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can
yeah.
like that kind of control scheme, and it's pretty much still point and click for the most part. So I thought that's just going to be a good combination. So I'm trying that out now, and I'm going to be adding kind of like a farming simulator where you combine like soil and seeds, put it on different pots, and the elemental stuff is where it comes from. It's like you can combine different elemental mandrakes. So say you got like a fire and air. Mm-hmm. You can get like an electric mandrake, something like that. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of playing around with that idea, and then after that you can like you can sell your mandrakes, and you get like and you open your shop, you get customers coming in, and you can decide if you want to sell or not. So it's very similar to like you know the game Moonlighter.
Yes, I do know Moonlighter. Yeah.
That's kind of like the inspiration for the shop mechanic.
Yep.
For the game, at least at the moment, and but it's gonna be like in first person, so you can just click on like customers to like try to decide on what action you would like to take. So yeah, it's very early and still like brainstorming some ideas, but at the moment that's kind of like the core of the game.
Yeah, yeah. This is one thing that I like to do, or that I'm trying to do in these interviews, is like, you know, press you a little bit on mechanics and that kind of stuff. So yep. having a mandrake shop, managing customers, is the management of customers meant to be like a difficulty thing? You know how you have some of those games that are like quite like frantic, where you're running around and trying to satisfy customers, or are they just kind of there as ways in which to sell the kind of the mechanic, or sell and like get some reward from the main mechanic?
So it's kind of like there's gonna be a timer for sure. Mm-hmm. So when you open a shop, the timer will kick off, and yeah. it's gonna be like, you know, customers will come into the shop, right? And they will like, you know, the AI will decide if they want to like pick a mandrake and buy it, and they probably just raise their hands or something like that, and mm-hmm. you have to click on them and decide if you want to actually sell the mandrake to them, or I have like ideas to like, you can kick them out if you want, you can like discount, you can inflate your price or whatever. Yep. You can do a bit of bargaining.
Yeah.
But it is kind of like time-based when you're opening your shop. But if you, when the shop is closed, you basically have, there's basically no time. So you yep. can end your phase or something like that, giving you time to like, you know, combine your to do different combinations of mandrakes on your your like greenhouse. So in those times
it's a bit of a cozy game kind of thing, like you're tending to your plants, exactly. you're making sure that you're getting the right nutrients to them or whatever. Like very chill kind of farm management game kind of thing, but in first person, which is pretty different.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's kind of like instead of like, you know, free movement, where it's gonna be like a kind of the old school dungeon crawler perspective, And that just so that you can still click on stuff instead of like, you know, clicking a button to like go to like, you know, click mode. And it's just like, I thought it just might make it more immersive.
But
yeah, I haven't really got the feels yet. So just testing that out now and like getting the systems up and running, at least the basic ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, see how it goes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you thought about art style? Because I know you have like in your all your Game Jam games, you've kind of developed kind of a pretty cool looking, I guess, like hand drawn kind of style. I assume you do all your art for your Game Jams. I'm assuming this, but like there's kind of a
time, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool like hand drawn, like quite thick lines, that kind of stuff. Like, what kind of art style are you looking for this one?
That actually was like, I was like playing around with that a few weeks ago, and it's gonna be a combination of 3D and 2D. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of like my art in like the art that I do is like through vector. Mm-hmm. I do sketch them first and then I vectorize them with like vector lines. It just makes it easier to change them and scale them up or down.
Yeah.
For this one though, what I've been kind of like experimenting with like manually texturing my 3D environments.
So
is like the structures and like some of the props are gonna be in 3D, but they're gonna be really boxy, like Minecraft boxy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the game Toem, T-O-E-M.
No, actually. It's kinda like
it's kinda like Minecraft, very boxy props or structures, but I manually textured them with using vector lines. And sometimes like I hand draw them. It's kind of hard to explain because most of the time, from what I see on games now, like one popular one that's used today is like they make 3D objects but they pixel art them.
Like with with like Crocodile and all that kind of stuff. It's
Yeah, I think I've seen that. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's like 2D textures over a 3D structure, like over a mesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty much like that, but instead of pixel art, I'm putting in like just some vector, or it's pretty much raster anyway as well. It's just like very you need a higher quality texture, so a bit more space, but I'm kind of putting them in an atlas to save some space and like performance, hopefully. See how it goes in that.
And would that include like, are you going to stylize stuff like shadows and stuff like that? Would you have like kind of baked in shadows, I guess, with the art, or are you going to try and do shadows and stuff out, so like just as normal kind of thing?
I think I'm going to be combining it or mixing it. It's going to be real-time shadows, but at least for the ambient occlusions, or like, you know, the crevices and stuff like that, I'll probably just manually shadow that.
But
drop shadows and stuff like that, I'll probably use like real time, you know, lighting system. Though I haven't really played around with it, but see how it goes.
Before we dip into the question of engine and plugins and all that kind of stuff, so are you gonna be so hand painted textures on a 3D world, are you then going to have like billboarding of stuff like the mandrakes themselves? Are they going to be 3D, or are you going to go like billboarded sprites?
It's likely going to be billboard. Most of the character, what I'm planning for the characters actually is like, they're going to be flat 2D.
Yep.
And they're going to be billboards, and the customers, because when you open a shop, you will not be able to like rotate the camera too much, so billboarding is probably not going to be needed. It's going to be like a first front view, so should be fine. But at least for the mandrakes, when they're in their pots, I'll probably billboard them so that they can constantly look at you when you move around, so it doesn't become weird. But I want to see how it looks like in actuality first before I commit to something like that.
Yeah, and that's where, like, yeah, just doing like a little, when I was speaking to Dan, who's one of the other interviewees in this series, he was actually talking about one thing that he's going to try is to have kind of two separate projects. Like, he'll have a project where he's doing grey boxing and just getting mechanics down, and then he has a project where he's actually mucking around with art styles and seeing how that looks on different things, and he's trying that out this time. It's the first time he's tried this way of doing it, which is actually just to have completely separate projects, just so you open up that one if you want to work on the art, and you open up that one if you want to work on the mechanics. So that might be
that's
one thing to
great.
Yeah, might be something to try out. Yeah. So engine wise,
try that out.
Yeah. It's a good idea. So you said the magical word, which is Godot, which we do love Godot. Yeah, yeah. What made you choose that one, especially for a game that's 3D? Because I know Godot is very good for 2D, very, very good for 2D, but 3D, it's still kind of catching up with Unity. So what made you choose it kind of despite that?
I think the main reason is it's open source. Probably that's the main reason. And the other one is like how lightweight it is, how like it's so easy to just like, you know, you open it up and just like you don't have to wait, just like close your project in like a few seconds. And I also like that, also like the workflow in it. I don't know, it's like when I use it the first time, it kind of just makes sense to me, the node system. And since then I've kind of like stuck with it, and I've just been like, I've been learning too much. Oh, not too much. I've just been learning a lot.
Yeah, I mean there is a lot to learn with regards to Godot. I mean it's got a lot of functionality in there. So are you a purist? Do you use the inbuilt IDE, or do you use like a Rider or a Visual Studio Code or something like that to actually code in it?
So yeah, I'm using the inbuilt GDScript. So
yes.
I think it's just much more easier. Yeah, it's just like much more convenient because it's all there, and I like things like to be in one place as much as possible. You can't avoid to like it's good to also have separate things, and you can't really avoid that. Some tools are just better than others depending on the use case of depending on how you use it, of course. But yeah, nah, it's The built-in GDScript is good enough for me. I don't really have much background in like actual programming. Python was the main one I used before starting game dev, so it actually worked well. I mean, GDScript actually just clicked well to me because it's quite similar to Python. So
yeah, it's definitely based on it, I think, or they've used that as the kind of archetype to follow.
So it's very, very similar syntax with the indentation and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so I guess talking about other tools, so you're using Godot as the game engine, what other kind of tooling do you have, like for drawing, for, you've already talked about using Obsidian for your kind of planning and tracking, what do you use to do like your art?
Yeah, so for the art stuff, I of course for the 3D stuff I'm using Blender. For the 2D stuff though, I'm using the Affinity suite. So I use Affinity Designer for the vector stuff, and Affinity Photo for raster. And I'm also planning to use Spine 2D for 2D animation. I haven't really gotten that far yet. I've used it before and I really liked it because it's quite simple, and it has like a graph editor like in Blender for doing animation. It also kind of integrates well with Affinity and Godot, so yeah.
Yeah, I think the Spine guys have actually built they update a Godot executable runtime, with Spine integration. So that can be really useful, because I think you can be editing in Spine and it updates like instantly going into Godot, which is pretty cool. I know we were looking at using that, or I'm pretty sure we have a license for Spine 2D, so if you need to try it out.
I have the basic license for it, but I haven't like committed it to the professional one yet.
Yeah. Well, if you want to try out the professional one, we can organize a catch up. I will sit next to you while you use it. So it's definitely not. I'm definitely not giving you the software for free. Just to put that out there.
No illegal stuff here.
No illegal stuff here. NT game devs are squeaky clean. We are legit. What's your timeline? Like, we're going to be checking in every quarter. So what are you kind of aiming for, say, in the next 3 months and say like the next 6 months or so?
Yes. So that's actually, one of the main reasons I pivoted to this game, because, I am pretty certain I can finish it this year. Mid-year is my, around July is my, optimistic. it could be moved, you know, but at the moment my next plan is to get the Steam page up and running with a basic trailer showing the core gameplay loop, so I'm hoping I can do that by Feb. Honestly,
wow,
the systems are pretty much shouldn't be too bad once I set it up, and content wise it's probably going to be the ones that are going to take a lot of time, like doing the art and making more Mandrake types and stuff like that. But hoping for February Steam page release, and then maybe March, April, or May for the demo, and then by July, August or September it's going to be the actual release. How it goes.
Yeah, that's a tight schedule. That's good. Yeah. I mean, I've seen what you can do in a month in our game jam. So I'm actually sitting here going, well, yeah, that's not unachievable for you. I think that's perfectly. If the systems are as simple as you're describing, then yeah, probably you are right. The content and getting all the art stuff done, and getting the environments done, maybe layering over some post-processing effects and that kind of stuff. That'll probably be the thing that takes the longest, getting kind of the
polishing
visual
stage,
style. Now that I'm thinking about it, so what's the win condition for this? Is it an Animal Crossing style thing where you're just trying to pay off some, large debt or something like that? Is there going to be much of a story? Are you going for a narrative in the game, or is it more just you're raising these mandrakes, you're selling them, which allows you to buy more mandrakes and sell them kind of thing? Is there going to be a win condition? And if there is it going to be narratively driven, or is it just going to be mechanically driven?
Yes, good. Really good question. So it's not going to be narratively driven. There's pretty much no story in the game, but there's going to be characters. So it is using the trope of you have a debt and you had to pay it, some kind of unfortunate thing that happened, and now you need money to fix that, so you make something, and that something is growing and selling mandrakes. There's gonna be character interactions, and probably gonna be doing not too much on that as well, but it's basically a lot of systems. You're basically just gonna be growing mandrakes, selling them, trying to reach your goal, the money, and while you're doing that, there's gonna be some characters that can interact with you, then that you can build some, not really building a relationship, there's gonna be no it's not gonna be a dating sim with different relationship bars, not that's gonna be too much for me now, but just gonna be some very casual exchange of words, and I do also plan to add some kind of global leaderboard, start the game, see how much money you can make in a period of time with some conditions, but that's gonna be an end game thing if it becomes if I get interest in it, but at the moment it's just gonna be a straight up grow, sell mandrakes, get money, and reach your goal, and
enjoy the chill the chill vibes.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, because I can totally imagine that you could, if you kind of got the systems in there, and were happy with the systems kind of early on, then not that I'm encouraging you to like, you know, scope creep, but
yeah.
But I think what you're talking about with regards to like developing relationships with specific customers, like you could have like, you know, your normal kind of NPCs, like the ones that you know kind of just come in and buy things and bugger off, but you could definitely have like special NPCs where, you know, selling them a specific combination of mandrakes like unlocks some story or does something like that. Could be something that people are interested in striving for, I guess, and gives it more of a personality. So you could do like that. That might be like something you could think about.
Kind of mini quest that I like that.
again, I am not encouraging scope creep. I know that scope creep is the devil.
Yeah,
but I think with those system-based games, like even having some small amount of story can really, really help, because you know, a system is, you know, as we've seen with games like Bellatro recently, you can have just a game that is just systems and numbers going up and people will absolutely love it. It's certainly not, you know, it's not a requirement to have a story, but you know, it can certainly help sometimes, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That's also like one of the things, like, you know, as a gamer, you know, system-based games are great, but I do like, you know, I do like to read a bit of lore, the world, and, you know, and if there's characters in the game, like especially with RPG games, that's when I get like really hooked into a game. So I kind of want to like do that, but in like, you know, in a non-scope creepy way.
Yeah.
Because that can really improve, that can really like, you know, expand your scope too much. So yeah, I'll see how it goes anyway, but definitely adding a little bit of story and like characters in the game too, you know, as you know, I think it's just good. You're right.
Yeah, I think it can really help, especially with those smaller, like, you know, we are necessarily making smaller games, so yeah, giving that little bit of extra personality to it can be pretty cool. I did want to ask, so what do you want to avoid doing? Like, because I know we talk about a lot of like, you know, what do you want to achieve with the game, all that kind of stuff. Is there anything that you like don't want to do? And I know like scope creep is an obvious one, but like, is there anything
else? Marketing, definitely.
Yeah.
Promotion.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a necessary evil.
Experience in that.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah. I mean, I saw a good video the other day, which has been going around. I can't remember the guy's name. It's this Nordic dude that talks about like the best marketing is just to make a good game, because, you know, the Steam marketplace and the Steam economy will essentially tell you whether or not it's good or not.
That's Jonas Tyrola, right?
Yeah, that's that Jonas guy. Yeah, it's a really good video, and he's got a good point. I think it's a little bit naive because I think you do still need to like be lucky enough that the initial, you know, 100 or 200 people actually like your game. But he's got a point. Just making good games.
He does.
Okay, well, so all right, so we've established you're making a farming, systems-based farming and growing and selling shopkeeper kind of game with two D elements in a 3D world that'll be hand textured with your very cool style. Yeah. Like what else is there to add to that? Have you got any, I don't know, any, oh, actually that's one thing I've been asking people. Is there any specific plugins for Godot that you find to be absolutely essential?
A lot. So, man.
Yeah.
I haven't even gotten everything, but, I've only using like 6-7 plugins at the moment.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah. Name them, because this is one thing that we want to do in this podcast, is actually share some good stuff with people. So I'll open up a notepad and I'll start typing so that we can put these in the show notes.
Yeah. No, I got a few in here. It's growing, but the main ones that I started with is like basically a lot of editor add-ons plugins to just kind of help out with Godot. So there's one here where you can preview the camera just by clicking on the camera node. Yeah. That's Camera Preview, I think.
Yep.
But it's called. That's great. The next one is like it's called Embed Game.
Embed Game.
Basically allows So it's on itch, so it's kind of like it's not in the asset library, but what it does is like when you run the game, instead of like having a separate window, the it actually goes to your editor window.
It doesn't
create a separate window, so it's good if you don't have much screen or not much of a monitor, if you're working your laptop or something.
Sure.
Gives you a bit of space. So that's one. The next one is To-Do Manager. Probably used that before.
Yep, I know
that's
one.
That's a great one to just like add some things for your code. And there's also this one called Runtime Debug Tools. That one allows you to like while at runtime, it allows you to basically select your game, select your editor, and allows you to like select objects while the game is running and change stuff. So it's something similar to Unity.
Yeah, yeah, but that's one thing that people complain, or not complain about. That's one thing people that note that Godot doesn't natively have is the ability to actually easily change stuff at runtime. Yeah. You can, there's but it's just harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm gonna use some of these. I haven't heard of some of these, so this is great.
So the next one is state charts, Godot state charts.
It's
basically a state machine, but it allows you to do parallel states, which is like useful. For instance, it's actually useful for my game. I've used it on one of my systems, so it's great.
And that's made by the guy that runs the Godoneers.
Godoneers, yeah. YouTube channel, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have another plugin that he made that I use, that I'll be using. I haven't like used it yet. I just recently watched a video of him explaining it. Maybe you have seen it. It's called Guide Input System. It's basically better version of the Godot's input system. It allows you to like create separate like control schemes. It's much more easier to like switch between, say, you're doing a first person mode to like a build mode or something like that.
That's really cool.
He has a full video about it. Just a tutorial of how it works, and really recommend that. It's really cool.
Yeah, he's an extremely good tutorial maker and like resource maker. He's an incredibly, I don't know what his background is, but like they're the kind of people that you need to keep in Godot because
he seems to be like an engine programmer or something like that. He's really good. I got another one as well. One that's called Phantom Camera. I think that's pretty popular. Between your cameras, and for my game it will be really helpful.
I think that's an interesting one that like a lot of people don't necessarily focus on. Like one of the things I've been doing recently is playing through like a bunch of small games that I've kind of never gotten around to, and one of them is A Short Hike. And A Short Hike, they use, obviously it's made in Unity, but they use Cinemachine, which is very similar to the kind of stuff that Phantom Camera can do. And just the fact that it does have kind of a mixture of static, or like following the player camera, and also kind of set camera shots. It makes such a difference, and you just don't actually see it that often in games now, or like nowadays. I don't know what it is, but you used to see it a lot in games like Resident Evil and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but I really think that especially in, I'm imagining in your game, you would have like kind of a bunch of different cameras that can be swapped to as you're moving, into like the seedling area and then back into the shop, and.
Yep.
They can still follow the player, but they're not necessarily over the shoulder and kind of in that mode. And it could really add some personality to the game.
Yeah, it makes it like a bit more cinematic in a way, I think.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe that's why they got Cinemachine or something.
Yeah, well, that's probably where the name comes from.
This is the last one. Last add-on is like the Shaker add-on. That's like
Oh yeah.
Allows you to just like easily like move objects and stuff. It's I've used it a bit on my last game, Jam Game. And yeah, it's very quick. I didn't have to like animate anything. Just modified some curves and that's it.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Oh yeah, I also used this add-on called Quiver. It's an easy way to add leaderboards to your game.
Ah yes, and yes. I remember that.
that's pretty cool. It's free as well, so up to a certain amount, but it works really well, and yeah, that's pretty much it for my add-ons.
Yeah,
do you have anything?
No, I mean the add-ons you've spoken about, like most of those I've at least heard of. I think the ones that I mainly use are, yeah, State Charts, Phantom Camera, and the To-Do Manager. I haven't actually used any of the other ones that you're talking about, so I'm gonna go away and use some of those. They sound really cool. Well, we're getting around about the half an hour to 40 minute mark on the podcast, which is roughly we'll wrap it up. Last question. So for this project, you are going to be solo. Do you think that you'll bring in anybody to do stuff like music, or you know, supplementary, like maybe like Steam page art, or you know, head like hero images, that kind of stuff? Or do you want to do it all solo?
I am actually thinking of like bringing in at least like to help with like with the Steam capsule, mm-hmm. And also maybe for the music, at least for the for like mixing and mastering and all those stuff, and maybe some composition stuff. But it's at the moment I plan to do it solo. I suppose if I get more resources, maybe if I get if I get more time as well, and it depends, I would say. But yeah, at the moment I'm just thinking of doing it solo, and like if it garnered enough interest, then I would likely bring someone in to like improve the quality of the assets and maybe decode and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, there's a bunch of funding going around Australia at the moment, so yeah, here's fingers crossed you get a slice of that pie.
Yeah,
at
fingers
some point.
Crossed. Yeah. You'll see that. And that's definitely, if I do get that funding, then I'll likely bring in ask some professionals to help me with like increasing the quality of the game, basically.
Yeah, and of course you have the NT game designers community to run QA voluntary QA force,
yes.
That we have up here. Everyone is very good.
It's always important.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much for joining us today, Jericho. We'll definitely be looking forward to the 3-month check-in. So that'll be happening around about, let's say April for now. But yeah, thanks again so much, and all the best with your Mandrake-based farming casual shopkeeper sim. Sounds awesome.
Thank you.